How many people do you know whose life's ambition is to serve and help others around them be their best? Danielle Viglione, former WNBA basketball player, is that person. And she has taken her skills and her talents to 916 Skills Academy, where she teaches others not only basketball skills, but life skills. This is an episode that you do not want to miss. Please join me in this episode of Why Not You. All right, everybody. I am joined today by Miss Danielle Viglione. This girl is doing it big. She is a three-time all-conference selection, earning first team all SWC honors as a freshman at the University of Texas, while she holds the most points in the game scored. Pouring it in with 48 points. I don't know how she did that one. That was Michael Jordan in the day. Played with the Monarchs and overseas. This girl is just, she is killing it, you guys. And she's also co-owner at the Sacramento Skills Academy. And she's in the Sacramento Sports Hall of Fame. Welcome, Danielle. How are you doing?
Happy to be here.
Good, good. Listen, before we get started, I like to start it with a quote. You know, I have to say this quote by Mr. John Wooden. I actually have two of them.
Oh, John Wooden is one of my favorites.
Yeah. Learn as if you're going to live forever, and live as if you're going to die tomorrow. The second one is, success comes from knowing that you did your best to become your best, that you are capable of becoming. Mr. John Wooden.
That's funny to pick those two quotes, because the second one was the quote that I've lived by.
Is it really?
I actually repeated to myself, success is a peace of mind, which is a direct result of self-satisfaction and knowing you did your best to become the best you are capable of becoming.
Wow.
So my high school coach read that to me when I was in high school, and I just lived by it.
Oh, my goodness.
That's all you can do, right?
That's it. So what made you get into basketball? I mean, was it something that you just kind of, I don't know, you saw other people doing it, you just wanted to kind of get into it, or did you just have that skill?
I think I got into it because I was competitive. I just wanted my brother. And then I went to wanting to be, I played with boys. They didn't have a girls league. I grew up in Michigan until I was 10 years old. So they, a little town called Lansing. And actually, if I would have gone to high school there, it would have been Magic Johnson's Lansing Everett. So I'd have gone to med school, but we decided to move out to California when I was 10. Wow. But I used to play baseball, hockey, ran, track, did everything. And I just wanted to come in the house and say I beat my brother. Or beat my dad and run. I was just super competitive, ultra competitive. And so I just took a liking to basketball when I moved out here. When I was 11, I played on my first girls team. And my nickname was Slam.
Slam? So were you dunking or what?
I am, because I was a shooter, you know? Like, what? I don't know.
So how'd you end up in Texas, out of all places?
That's a good question. I've lived my life from year to year and decade to decade, not really knowing what the next decade holds. So I just try to be the best I can be in the moment and enjoy life and enjoy people and help people. I'm a helper, by the way. And I love to grow. So I love to become 1% better. However, mm-hmm. I can grow, and then I can help others grow too. And so actually starting at 11 years old, I told myself, I just got something in my head. I get these ideas. I'm going to make 500 shots a day. And then if I didn't do it, I didn't feel accomplished that day. So I started doing it and started becoming a better shooter. Oh, wow. This is fun. I'm becoming better at something when you work at it. And then I went to Del Campo and I had a high school coach, Paul Romig, that just totally reconstructed my shot and just would work endless hours off the court. I mean, just out of practice time, out of weight time with me in the gym individually. And for someone in my life that believed in me so much, it helped me believe even more in myself. So as a coach today, I kind of look at life like that. Like I want to believe in you so much that you start to believe in yourself. And, you know, it's not that I didn't believe in myself, but always having somebody there that believes in you, my family, my high school coach, it encourages you along. So I would say I just wanted to be better than I was the day before. That's what got me to the University of Texas. I was recruited by over probably 100, I don't know how many schools. Back in the day, it was more letters and phone calls and stuff like that. But I chose the University of Texas between three other schools. One was Notre Dame, Arizona, and Colorado, and Texas. So those were my four top picks. And I remember sitting there before I signed with my high school coach, Paul Romig, again, monumental in my life, asked me the question, where would you want to be if you could never play basketball anymore? And my answer was Texas, because I felt like it was family. When I went on my recruiting visit, they were very honest. They put me in the dorms with the players. The players were like me. They were going in the same direction as me. They weren't really partiers, which I wasn't a partier. I wanted to play ball. That's what I wanted to do. And they were gym rats too. So I think everything kind of orchestrated it. God kind of orchestrated a certain way. And that's where I ended up.
Wow.
Burn orange, hook 'em horns. Come on, you got to do a hook 'em.
So when you're playing for a big time school like that, I know it's extremely competitive. Like, so how important was that environment to actually thrive in?
Well, when I first went to the University of Texas, I think my work ethic was there. Everything was pretty much there and instilled in me by my high school coach and myself. When I got to the University of Texas, there were people here in Sacramento that said, she's not strong enough. She's can't jump high enough. She's not athletic enough to play at the Division I level. And I didn't listen to them one beep, because I knew that they were just, I don't even know why they were saying that, but I was just not to prove them wrong. I was not going there to prove them wrong. I was just saying, I'm going to be the best I can be. And if that's not enough, then that's not enough. And so I ended up starting as a freshman. We had five freshmen come in that year. So three of us started and ended up getting freshman of the year, averaging 21 points. We ended up winning the conference tournament. We lost to Seton Hall in the NCAA playoffs. So that was kind of a heartbreaker, but we had next year, right?
Right.
So, but yeah, I always just, I guess I loved it. I loved the challenge. That's one of the reasons I went to the University of Texas, because they were losing five seniors. Wow. And I knew it would be a building year, and I liked that.
So, and I know you already, I mean, you talked about being extremely competitive, you know, just wanting to beat your brother and your dad. What kind of mindset did you have to have, or did you have back then, just to compete as a freshman and be like, you know what, I'm about to help this team make it to the next level?
Well, I think my teammates made it super easy, because when I went in, we wanted to win. That's what we wanted to do. We didn't care what role we played. We just wanted to win. And I remember, you know, Keisha Henderson and all my teammates, if I missed a shot, they'd be like, D, you got this. No problem. Get the next one. Shoot the next one. And then, you know, Amy at 5'10" was the leading rebounder in the conference. So, you know, we just had a work ethic that was above all other. We got to the University of Texas. We literally, before season started, us three freshmen were going in the morning and working out at 6 a.m. In addition to the skills workouts we had in the weight room and all the other stuff, just put in the extra work. And we were a transition team. We would go, 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 go. And the fans, I mean, we averaged 9,000 fans a game.
Wow.
So all the fans that year, because we like to shoot a lot of threes,
yeah,
is three cards, and they would all hold them up. Every time we made a three, they would hold them up. but then I also remember one time we were playing Tech, and it was a really bad game. It was a really bad start, and the fans don't sit down until we actually score. So we had all these fans standing up, and I remember Jody Conrad called a timeout, and Amy, the leading rebounder, she's like, hey, y'all, we got to score. These fans have been standing up forever. Like, and she kind of lightened the moment. And then actually we went on to win that game. So, but we were down like 15-0 early on. It was bad. But then we came back and we got competitive. We kind of laughed a little at that. And sometimes competitiveness is laughing too. It's having fun. Being competitive is fun, especially against our rival Texas Tech. So. Wow.
And that is funny. Just thinking about all these fans just standing until you guys actually score. Like, when are they going to score?
Yeah, she came in and Jody Comrade was probably about to yell at us. And she just said, oh, we got all these fans standing. We've got to score, y'all. Let's go. So that was a monumental turning point in the game.
That is funny. So I know, like, you know, playing at a high level like that, of course, you're going to experience, you know, loss or, you know, have some challenges. How do you handle loss or challenges?
Up until about 19 years old, I didn't handle them very well because my identity was in basketball. So if we played well or if I played well, I was good. If we didn't play well and I didn't play well, I wasn't good. I wasn't sleeping that night. And I wasn't a nice person to be around because I just didn't want to talk to people. I was upset at myself, upset that we lost, super competitive. And so going into my sophomore year of college, because my identity was in basketball and that's and what I did, God stripped basketball from me. He said, I'm going to take it away from you and see how you deal with it. So that's one of the hardest things I had to go through was sitting every day and watching practice, going from all of us having such a great freshman year to pretty much at one time, I think all of our starters were out with injury that year. And I remember that was the real that was the year that I started going to FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And I remember a guy was up there speaking and he said, hey, is there anyone in this crowd that feels empty and cannot fill it with anything? Can I fill it with your sport? Can I fill it with people? Can I fill it with anything in this world? I said, well, that's me because I just sit there all day. I feel like I'm not accomplishing anything. I feel ill-accomplished. And so, you know, I actually raised my hand and accepted Jesus, November 2019. I mean, when I was 19 years old, November of, I think it was 1994. And, from that point on, you know, I didn't change as a person. I'm still the same personality, same person, but I think going through hardship was a little bit different for me because now I understood that I can put it in God's hands. And I started to kind of have the thinking as I was playing, you know, I do the work. I put in the work. I get my reps up. I do everything that I can that's within my control. And then everything else is God's reputation is at stake after that.
Right.
So he's in control. So if he wants to do something for his glory, he will. If not, it's something that I have to be okay with. So yeah, that was big. So he stripped basketball from me to give him. So that was biggest year of my life.
How did that help you, you know, when it was time to leave University of Texas and make that transition to the WNBA, to the pro level?
Yeah, well, it was tough because my senior year, I had no idea if I was going to still play or not play. And that last game against Notre Dame was super tough because we lost by 3. And I thought I was going to be drafted and thought I never thought I wasn't. And then I didn't get drafted. And so I guess a bunch of people could go to the combine. And I went to the combine, did a terrible job, I felt like. And then I guess I did not get drafted after that for sure, did not get picked up. So then I wasn't giving up. They had these individual tryouts in Sacramento, and I got invited to the one in Utah. And they had basically a 3-day tryout in Sacramento, where it was 3 hours, 3 hours, and 3 hours. And then the next day it was 3 hours and then 2 hours. And I think they just wanted to see who was standing at the end of the tryouts. And I was definitely standing because I said, I am definitely going. And I was an Energizer bunny. I just ran. Nobody wanted to guard me. That's how, and then they narrowed it down to 20 and I was in the top 20 and then they narrowed it down to 2 and they selected myself and this other, girl from Purdue, Carissa Yason at the time. And we got play for the WNBA. I didn't really play though. I played a few minutes here and there because Ruthie Bolden, one of my best friends, was a gold medalist and she's playing like 38, 40, 39 minutes a game. So, but every single day in practice, I made an effort to make her the best that she could be. Yeah. And I wanted to make the team the best that you could be. I remember the coach stopped practice one time and said, why is this girl that never gets in the game working harder than all y'all? And everybody's like, D, why you had to do us like that? And then they all got on me. They got mad at me. I said, I'm just making y'all better. But yeah, that was my experience. I was just honored to be there. I didn't care about, you know, I had started my whole life, but it didn't matter to me. It mattered. I was playing. I mean, I was playing with the best girls in the world.
Right.
And so I just wanted, it helped my game. I just wanted to be better.
That's awesome. And I like the fact that you, I mean, even though you said that you weren't playing that much, your goal was to actually help them get better, your teammates. And so how unselfish is that, you know? Because you got so many people who just like work hard. Oh, what about me? Recognize this. Oh, you know, all of the hard work that I'm pouring into it. I'm expecting, you know, something totally different. But here you are. Your mindset is like, listen, if I'm not going to get in, I'm about to push my teammates to make them better.
Yeah, and I was always the one doing the bike after the games, because if you didn't get in for at least 20 minutes, you were working with Al Biancone, whom I still work out with today, by the way. He's awesome. Or I was on the bike for 20 minutes. So I just knew after the game, that's where I was going.
Yeah.
but I loved it. You know, it wasn't. Someone asked me tonight at a team training, and they said, what was hard in your life that you had to go through? And what did you give up? What did you have to give up to do what you did?
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's an interesting question, because like even playing for the Monarchs, I wouldn't say it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
You got to meet people. You got to be you got to improve your game. You got to be around the best. You got to be with the best coaches. You got to be the first in 1997, the league opening up.
Uh-huh.
It was an honor and it was fun. So like when it's not a sacrifice, it's never a sacrifice. It wasn't a sacrifice for me to sit on the bench. It wasn't a sacrifice for me to work hard in practice. It wasn't a sacrifice to do the extra work, because I loved it. And it was joy to me. It was absolute joy, the game.
And that's what it is. I mean, when you love something that much, it's not work, especially when you're operating in your gift, right?
Yeah, you feel like this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So I was telling the players tonight, I said, I didn't want to be out partying. I didn't want to be doing this or that, because
mm-hmm.
I love what I love. And that's how God programmed me, I guess. Now, what was there hard times? Yes, but yeah. It's just how you look at it. This is making me better. I looked at all the hard times as making me a better player. It's growing me in some way.
You know, one of the things I do love about it is that you're actually still in the game and you're teaching other people now. And so as you're teaching other people, how are you helping them develop those same kind of habits that you actually acquired and had as a high school player, as a college player, and as a professional?
Well, I'm just trying to make them think the game for themselves, mm-hmm. and helping with their skill and helping them with the details, attention to detail. And helping them have fun with the game. I mean, and being a mentor to them and loving on them and helping them create relationships they wouldn't normally otherwise create, which is life. And I'm a helper in my Enneagram. You know, we did the Enneagram.
Right.
My number is a 2, which is a helper. I'm sure when I played, it was more of an achiever, a 3.
Uh-huh.
I'm definitely a helper. When I can't help people, it puts me off a little bit. Like I fall off. So I just try to be there for them. You teach them about hard work. You teach them about consistency. I make them study the game. Like I just had a guy today, and I was just telling him, hey, you need to watch the point guard for your favorite school, and I want you to watch him off the ball, on the ball, on defense, on offense, and I just want you to study the game. So just helping in actions and studying the game and helping them just grow. It's a thought that I would never love anything more than playing, because I said to myself, I get so much joy out of playing and the competitiveness of the sport that I will never love anything else as playing when I retired. And I was wrong. So I love what I do way more than playing, because you get to impact so many other lives, not just your own.
And the thing is, you're not just training and coaching people locally. You're coaching people abroad also. You're going out of the country. What is that like when you're actually coaching people? I mean, of course, they know basketball. They probably have a passion and love for basketball. But I know just going to another country and being in another culture is different. How do you adapt to that?
I actually love it because I love learning about new cultures and I love meeting new people. And I actually played 9 years overseas. So I played in Israel 1 year, Turkey for 2 years, and 6 years for Italy in Italy. So I've been back to Italy to do camps. I've been in China. I've been in Hong Kong. I've been in Macau. I've been all over the place, Mexico. We get to travel the world, really, and teach basketball now instead of play basketball. So wow. I love the different cultures and just learning their language, like in Mandarin, e-e-sansa is 1, 2, 3, 4. So like if I go and I say to them and I start numbering them off, e-e-sansa, and then they start to laugh and they start to love it because you're like engaging in their culture. And so I have a great time. It's fun. It's fun. But you know, we're all humans. So we're all the same people. We speak a little bit of different languages and look a little different. So, but the players that I've worked with all overseas and here, they all pretty much love the game and they want to get better.
Yeah. Or
they wouldn't be doing it. So.
And the fact that you've actually been able to, I would assume, right, being able to maintain all these relationships with people overseas, I mean, places that you've actually played basketball, I think people take that kind of stuff for granted sometimes, just the relationships and being able to be humble.
Yeah, I mean, I always tell all the kids that I work with and players that you never know, like tomorrow you could receive a call that will change your life, mm-hmm. good or bad, right? Like your first quote that you have, you know, learn as if you are going to live forever and live as if you're going to die tomorrow. You just never know what's going to happen. And for me to have the experience of just going to these different places and helping, I think the coolest experience was with Nike when I started doing the Nike All Asia camps. And when I did the Nike All Asia camps, they bring like NBA coaches and all the national team Chinese coaches. And they bring, it's all Asia. So they bring coaches from all over Asia. And it was the coolest experience just to be around the best, like just to be around. Just be the worst coach in the room. Like it was because then you grow, right? I'm not saying I'm the worst, but I definitely didn't have the experience of some of these coaches that were coming and some of these national team coaches. And I always love to ask questions and I always love to grow. Like I always, well, how do you teach this? Well, what do you think about this? And that was that was fun for me.
Yeah.
Learn from every player that you coach too. Like everyone's different.
Right.
So, has a different way of learning. Everyone has a different way of doing things and different body type and different athleticism. And, you know, so it was super fun. And when they brought China would always bring a couple NBA players out. So I got to meet a lot of the NBA players. So all the boys love that.
Like,
so, but I thought that one of the coolest was I had a lot of respect for was James Harden. He came out and he was there early and he got in the girls clinic and he went with all the girls. He was awesome. He was awesome. He definitely didn't stand by the side and watch. He was in it.
Creating memories. Man, that had to be, a huge, and what an impact I bet that made with all those he engaged with. So how important is, you know, just personal development to you and, you know, growing yourself so you could grow others?
Well, sometimes I have a hard time with that because I'm always helping others. I forget about myself. We were talking in church the other Sunday about rest. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the commandments. God says, take a Sabbath. And sometimes we forget to do that. We forget to take care of ourselves. But we actually can't give if we don't first grow ourselves. So we can't help people unless we help ourselves. And that's by one of the things I've learned is rest. And just not doing anything sometimes, but like, completely just being with the Lord in his presence. And, you know, I've struggled with that. That's a tough question. That's a tough question. I it's hard to rest. I don't like resting because I feel like not accomplished, right? There is my person coming out. So I have to remind myself to take some time for myself and fill myself. And a lot of times it's funny because I'll go to do all these events and I'll go to speak and I'll go to do this and that. But at the same time, as I'm going, I'm getting fed. Right. So it's kind of goes both ways. I mean, I'm learning, I'm growing. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I'm teaching and helping them grow. But yes, I do have to re-energize and just really be in the Lord's presence and just knowing that this is what God wants me to do. And this is what God wants me to say. And this is what being led by the Spirit is
right
for me, because when I'm not, it's just all me, and all me is not all good.
Wow. I can surely testify to that right there. Sometimes you do get busy, right? And it's like, man, I got this thing to do. I got this item to do. I have this on my checklist. And next thing you know, man, it's time to go to bed. And you're like, man, I didn't spend any time reading or any kind of like personal devotion. It's almost like you almost feel empty.
Yeah.
Or I just didn't, I didn't achieve everything I needed to achieve or something like that for the day. Are there any books that you've actually read or are currently reading that has helped you?
A long time ago, I read The Mentor Leader by Tony Dungy. Really liked that. Uh-huh. And there was a quote in that that said, when you're coaching somebody or helping somebody, right, are you willing to let them have all the success and the credit? And I really love that, because as my job, I am. I mean, they are doing it. All I'm doing is helping. But I think sometimes we want to be the reason why other people do good, and we want to be the reason why we do well.
Yeah.
But really, really, we just have to give that up. That's being self-sufficient, right?
Right.
We are self-sufficient. We are God-sufficient. We need God. And so when I start thinking I can do this and I'm self-sufficient, then I need to go back in the presence of the Lord.
Yeah.
And let him just be with me for a little bit, because he gives me everything I have.
Yeah.
And so, and then the other book I would say is Lead for God's Sake.
Mm-hmm.
Lead for God's Sake starts off, one of my friends, the story of that is I got invited to go to Nike for 3 days, Portland, and train some of the WNBA players, the Nike athletes. And, my friend asked me if I'd do it. And she said, well, I know you're good with college and high school and younger kids, but I think you'd be good with the pros. And I said, okay, that's fine. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
So then a couple of days later, she sends me the list of who is actually going to be there for those 3 days. And it's like Sue Bird, it was Sue Bird, Simone Augustus, Jewel Lloyd, like all the Olympic team, basically. And I started to say to myself, am I good enough? Like, why me, Lord? Right. Why?
Uh-huh.
And when I was talking to one of my coaches that's a friend, he recommended the book Lead for God's Sake. And it's starting off by, hey, lead for God's sake. And then it goes to lead for God's sake.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not doing this because I've accomplished. I'm not being presented this opportunity because I have all these accolades and because I'm the best trainer or I'm the best person at this. I'm being presented this because God needs me in that space to encourage and inspire other people that are doing the same thing that I've done, at a higher level, I might add. So I never was on the Olympic team. And so I got caught with these negative thoughts in my head. What am I going to teach them? Mm-hmm. They're better than I ever was. But it's not about that. It's not about that. You're missing the point, Danielle.
Uh-huh.
It's about encouraging people and inspiring people to believe in people, right?
Right.
And to help them just reach their goals.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I went, it was a great time. We had a great time bonding and, you know, on the court. And I'm so glad that I did it. But I came away from there and saying, yeah, you're right. It's about relationships and getting mm-hmm. to know people. Getting to know each person there was better than any game I ever played. Like, yeah. Creating these relationships and then bonds, and later down the line, you can just be there for them.
Mm-hmm. God straight up elevated you. He elevated you to touch these people.
Because I could never do that on my own, that's for sure.
So I know our environment is like extremely important to us and people that we hang around with. How important is being accountable to other people and have them, you know, just kind of check you here and there and kind of push you to help you become better?
Yeah, I want people to do that. So if they see something, I want them, mm-hmm. you know, criticism, not necessarily criticism, but checking you
yeah.
is one of the hard things to do.
Yeah.
And to take in. But I want that because it only makes you better. Like I think one of the best people at this is George Raveling. And George Raveling he was the global director for Nike when I was going over to China. Mm-hmm. And he would sit me down after the camp was over, and he would say, "What do you think went really well?" And blah, 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 blah. "Well, what do you think could have been better?" "Well, maybe this and this and this and this." And he never said a word. He never said a word. I came up with it all my own. And those conversations would help me for the rest of my life. And I remember when I was going through a little in between, hey, do I still want to do this? Do I want a college coach? What avenue do I want to go now? Am I supposed to be college coaching? Everybody says I should be college coaching. And so I call him. And he was the one person I call. I say, "I have this dilemma." And he asked me, he said, "Where do you want to be in 5 years?" And I said, "Well, doing what I'm doing." He said, "Well, there's your answer." Wow. Never answered anything. He just asked the right questions.
Right.
I think a lot of times, you know, when we have people around us and surround us, that accountability partners, asking the right questions is the perfect way to hold somebody accountable.
Yeah, that's good.
And I love it. I mean, my husband Sterling holds me accountable, and the people I let in my inner circle are huge in our lives, because we want to go in God's direction. We don't want to go our own direction or stray from what He has for our lives. So
yeah.
I think by having a group, small groups with other believers too, because I'm a believer, a Christian, and I want other Christians around me to hold me accountable, to ask me questions, to keep me on the right path, because I know I don't always do a good job of that.
Yeah. The same way. I need it.
Yeah, we all do. We all need it.
Because I have so many blind spots, so it's good to get like another perspective.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, you know, they'll give you a perspective and you just can't see it. Right. Like, but you know what? It's funny that you say that, because I had a girls camp not too long ago, and I had flew in a bunch of coaches from all over the United States. And this one lady was speaking at lunchtime, and she brought glasses for everybody, all the girls. She bought like 100 and something. And all the glasses, you could see different colors. Like one glass put on is yellow. One glass was red. One glass you put on is orange. You see through blue. And she was saying, like, we all come from different avenues of life. We come from different upbringings. We look through our glasses and we see blue. But if you look through her glasses, she doesn't see blue. So how do we get along, and how do we create camaraderie, teamwork with people that have different perspectives and different feelings about things than us? Right. And the answer for me is put on their glasses.
That's good.
So if my glasses are red and yours are blue, I need to put on the blue glasses and kind of see life how you see it. To that person.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a good exercise.
Yeah.
It's good and it's simple.
I mean, it's easy with the glasses because you see different colors, but it's not in life because you can't comprehend how they're seeing life. Right. But then when you start asking them questions, comes back to asking them questions and getting to know them and why they feel the way they do. I think that's monumental in understanding their perspective and seeing blue.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, since this podcast is all about helping people become, you know, intentional with, you know, following through on their ideas and gifts so they could become the best version of themselves, what can you share to actually help people, or just to inspire people just to go beyond what they actually see?
Oh, gosh. Surprise question. The first thing that comes to mind when you said, what advice can I give them about achieving their passion, about my first thing that I say, take it day by day, moment by moment, and really follow the spirit. Like, you know, when you're on the right path. I know when I'm on the right path. I know when I'm on God's path. Like, I had this vision one night, and there's this straight road, and I'm on the straight road, and I feel peace, and I feel good, and I, you know, there's joy, and then there's content. There's all these feelings that we get from God, right? And then all of a sudden, I just start to veer off the road and go on this trail over here. And I start to feel frustrated and overwhelmed and like, what's wrong with me? And like, what's going on? Why is nothing going my way? And you have to stop and realize, hey, well, I got off path. I got off track. Right. So I am envisioning this path. Stay on your path that God created for you. I don't have to try to go on somebody else's path, or I don't have to try to veer off and go off on my own path.
Right.
God's way is the highway for me.
Right.
And the path that I feel most peace, contentment, and he's going to provide. And I guess that peace that comes along with the biggest word I would think answering that question is trust.
Mm-hmm.
Do you trust him? And I have a bracelet. I don't know if you can see it, but it's God loves us. Sin divides us. Jesus died on the cross for us. Will you trust Jesus?
Mm.
Will you trust God? And so I think the question that you have to ask yourself through all this is, am I trusting God in the process? Am I trusting God with my life? And I mean, he can make anything happen at any point.
Right.
Sometimes he just sits back and says, oh, let me see how long she's going to do this without my help. So, and that's when I'm like kind of veering off that path or the road. And then he always brings us back on that road. We always, yeah. We always find our way.
True. There's a short way, and then there's a long way. And when you deviate, that's when it becomes that long way.
True. And there is God's way. So I feel like it's already planned out. My life is already planned out. I just have to be obedient and be in the spirit each moment. And I'm definitely not perfect. Yeah. And or will I ever be perfect? But I can strive to be. Strive to do things the way he would like me to do. And but I'm human, so I have that side of me.
I know.
I have to do what I want to do sometimes, and that's never good. End up in a corner somewhere, someone else's path.
Right. Wow. Daniel, I really appreciate your time tonight. This was good.
This was good. I also thought, I keep on thinking about stuff with that question. That question's a huge question, because one of my friends told the camp this last month, she said, be your authentic self. Don't try to be somebody you're not.
Wow.
And, you know, love what you do and inspire others while you do it.
Yeah.
Try to just do that every day.
Mm-hmm. Be who you are, not somebody else.
No.
Yep.
Be your authentic self, who God created you to be.
That's it.
And that's when you're at the most peace and you're doing, you're accomplishing the most, right? You're most success when you're your authentic self.
Man, what a good way to end.
Yeah. Come on.
Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of Why Not You with our guest, Miss Danielle Viglione. I appreciate her taking her time and just talking with us today. Next week, I will be joined by a special friend of mine out of Chicago, Mr. Cassius, who found his success going where others did not want to go. There you all take care, and you have a blessed week. And remember, continue to strive on becoming the best version of you.